Hi, and welcome from our studios in downtown Washington, D.C. This is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. I think we have a really interesting show today. The show is going to be dealing with youthful offenders. The guests today are LaVonya Douglas. She is a community supervision officer. Most of you know our people as parole and probation agents in Washington, D.C. We call them community supervision officers. We have Eddie Ellison. Eddie's been by our microphones before, and Eddie is here in his capacity as a mentor to Bob. And we're not going to be using Bob's real name. We're just going to call him Bob. Bob is a youthful offender. He is under our supervision at Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. He's 19 years old. So we have an array of individuals from the bureaucracy, from LaVonya to former offender Eddie Ellis to Bob, a current offender. And we're here to discuss all the issues dealing with youthful offenders. And to LaVonya and Bob and Eddie, welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to remind everybody that we do listen and respond to every request that you make to us, every comment, every criticism, and we really appreciate the fact that you are following the show. Last month, we had 123,000 requests for the show. That is a record, and we really are impressed by that, and we really do appreciate your input. Continue your input. If you have suggestions for new shows, if you have criticisms, it doesn't matter. Go ahead and search on your internet search engine for DC Public Safety, or simply go to media.csosa.gov and go ahead to the comment box or to my email direct or through Twitter, my Twitter address, and let us know what it is we could or should be doing. LaVonya Douglas, you've been a community supervision officer with the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency for how long?
For 6 years.
Okay, so you're a veteran.
I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the point is, in all of this, is that we're dealing here with the show with the youthful offenders. And we have Bob, who is going to remain anonymous, and Eddie Ellis. Now, the bottom line is this, LaVonya. We have this fear. We have, in some cases, even a revulsion. In terms of youthful offenders, you cannot pick up the newspaper without a youthful offender, in many cases, under the age of 18. You have to be 18 and above to come to see SOSA unless you're convicted as an adult. But we constantly read about youthful offenders. And if you take a look at the research, people are scared.
Right.
In many cases, of youthful offenders. We have Bob, and Bob's an example of a young man who has recognized his set of circumstances and reached out and wants to get beyond the chaos that's happening to so many young men on the streets. And we have Eddie, who has been mentoring to Bob. Eddie is a former offender who's been by our microphones before. So talk to me about Bob.
Well, when Bob initially came to the office, he came on supervision for simple assault. He came to the office, and he was really non-responsive. He didn't want to answer any of the questions. He was mean. We would ask him a question. He would give a smart answer. One of the initial questions he asked us was, where's his juvenile PO? He wanted to talk to his juvenile PO. He didn't want to talk to us. He didn't want to answer any of our questions. We asked him where he lived, and he said we should have the information. So he put up a wall that we had to break through to actually get him to talk to us, to get him to give us any information.
Is that unusual?
That is not unusual.
Yes, and people need to understand that many of the people come who are supervised by us or any other parole and probation agency in the country, and what I call a chip on their shoulder the size of Montana.
Because they think we're out to get them. They think we're not here to help them. The whole system is against them. And so we have to show them that we really care about them. Mm-hmm. We have to show them that, you know, each individual person is different. And Bob has special talents that he brought to us and he told us about after we actually got through the wall of him being upset that he was even on supervision.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, after we broke through that wall, and how we broke through is we started talking about his conditions. One of his conditions was he had to stay away from the high school that he was attending.
Okay, and let me, he assaulted somebody in the high school.
He assaulted somebody in a high school.
Involved in a fight in a high school.
Right, and the boy fell down, you know, fights in school, and the mother pressed charges, and he wound up in CSOSA for a year probation.
All right.
And the stay away was from the stay away from the boy, and also he had to stay away from the school.
All right.
So he couldn't attend the school anymore. So, you know, we told him he couldn't attend school. He said, well, no, I'm going to go up there tomorrow. My mom's going to get me back in school. So the perception was that his mother would be able to help him to get back into school. Mm-hmm. And actually, he wouldn't because the court said he couldn't go. So when he realized what was really going on, he got really upset and was like, you know, just let me go do my time. I don't even want to, you know, if I can't go to school, I'm not going to do supervision. You know, I like school. I like going to school.
I'm not going to do supervision. I'm going to call my own shot.
Yeah. Right. So he was like, he wanted to go do his time. So then we had to, then at that point, I realized as his community supervision officer, we had a lot of work to do with him. We had to get him back into school. And
how do you maintain your composure with folks like Bob? Now, I've done this before. I've done, as this audience knows, I've done jail or job corps kids. I ran group in the Maryland prison system. I used to be a street counselor in the city of Baltimore when I was putting myself through college. Wow. You know, the hardest job on the face of the earth is dealing directly with young individuals who have this chip on their shoulder the size of Montana. I've seen so many young individuals, so many young men just throw their lives away. Mm. It's very difficult to be both the enforcer and enforce the rules and be the helper all at the same time. How do you deal with that?
You kind of have to take yourself out of the situation. You can't, like, for me, I couldn't get upset. A lot of times when you're talking to somebody and they're not receptive to what you're saying, you immediately get defensive and you're like, you're going to do what I say because A, B, C, and D. But realizing we are talking to a youthful offender and we can't supervise them like we will supervise adults because they may not understand or grasp exactly what we're saying, I had to just let him talk, get out what he needed to say, and then say, okay, Kevin, Bob, I understand what you're going through. And I understand how you feel, but I'm here to help you. And this is what we're going to do. This is what I'm going to do as your PO. I'm going to help you to get back into school. I'm going to talk to your principal. I'm going to talk to your mother to show him that I'm here for him. I'm here to help him.
Is Bob back in school?
Bob is back. Well, he's not. Bob did finish school at the school that he had to stay away from.
Right.
And, you know, we had to do a whole lot of work to get him to back into school. We had to call the school board, the principal at the school. I had to get talk to the principal, his counselors, and I had to give all that information to the judge and convince the judge to actually let him go back to school for the remainder of the year because he only had like a month and a half left.
Right.
So we couldn't get him into other school, so he would have either got an F for the rest of the semester and not been able to become a senior this year, or you know, just he would not have gone back to school. So he did get him back to school, and now he's going to a different school. He's doing very well. He's graduating in June, and so he's doing what he needs to do to.
When I worked with younger people, I always said they ran on 6 out of every 8 cylinders because you would sit there and talk to the person and you would have to fill out this form to get the person back in school.
Right.
Because I had a guy on the streets of Baltimore who wanted to escape the streets of Baltimore and we got him back in school and he had to fill out all of this paperwork to get back. And so I'd see him the next day and said, man, did you fill out the paperwork? So what paperwork? And, yeah. You know,
that's true.
This is hard. It's hard work.
Because you have to get the parents involved, too.
Yeah, you do.
Because when they're in school, you have to get the parents to fill out. You got to get the parents to register them. And I would call the school daily, and I really couldn't do it. So I have to stay in contact with his mother, his grandparents, his godparents. So getting involved with the family also was one of the bigger issues, too, because we had to get them involved and make sure they did what they were responsible for. Because as a PO, we can't necessarily do everything. We can just kind of put some things in place, but the family has to come together and help out our youthful offenders as well.
Lavanya, the next time we talk, I want to go ahead and talk to you about whatever programs we have for younger offenders here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. Okay. But now what I want to do is to go over to Eddie Ellis. Eddie's been by our microphones before. In fact, Eddie's probably been interviewed more on this show than any other human being. I mean, you know, we could have the mayor of the... Eddie's been on the front page of the Washington Post, by the way. You know, we could have the mayor here. We could have the chief of police here most frequently. But we have Eddie Ellis here, and he's been our most frequent guest. How you doing, Eddie?
Okay, Mrs. Ice, how you doing?
I'm all right. How you doing, by the way?
I'm doing well.
How's it coming?
Things are going well for me.
All right. Eddie is a former offender who used to be under our supervision. He's now mentoring Bob. Tell me a little bit about your experience in terms of mentoring Bob.
First of all, I take from my personal experience the things I've been through in my life, and I understood when I first met Bob that we were very similar in a lot of ways. And the thing that I really appreciated about him was that he wanted to go to school and he wanted to do right.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 16, I really did enjoy school.
Right.
It was just
who did,
was.
By the way?
I don't know. But Bob enjoyed going to school.
Okay. Really, well, there you go. Well, God bless Bob.
Yeah. And that really meant a lot to
me. By the way, did you ever get in fights in school?
Yes.
Me too.
Yes.
So here's Bob sitting here convicted of fighting in school when you and I were both not convicted of being in fighting in school, but I fought in school.
So did I.
Okay.
So did I.
All right. Go ahead.
Well, I think personally, I really enjoyed talking to him because it really helped me reflect on my life and understand what I still need to do for myself. But talking to him and seeing that he wanted to do the right thing and he recognized where he went wrong in his life was very important to me.
All right. How close is Bob to really messing it up? How many young men have both of us been with through my career, throughout your time? How many young men are on that edge? Because when I dealt with the Job Corps kids, I discovered this. One-third knew they were in a jam and wanted to make their way through life. One-third were sitting on that fence, and they could be pushed to either side very easily. And one-third were gone. There's not a daggone thing in the world you could do for that final third. Where do you think Bob is?
I think he's in a good position to be successful.
Good. And how many Bobs are there out there?
There's a lot of Bobs out there, but unfortunately, the news don't focus on that. You just made a comment about how the media put these things in newspaper about these youth offenders, but it's no different than the schools. They closing all the schools and recreation centers, so that's more dangerous to me.
Okay. But, I mean, we've had this discussion before, and that's why I'm really pleased that you're back at the microphones, because when we talk about young offenders, I mean, when we talk about offenders in general, you know, the news in many cases is not good in terms of the statistics, in terms of the total number of arrests, and this there's a dichotomy here. A lot of these people who are picked up, who are rearrested for relatively minor crimes, and in some cases, relatively stupid crimes. They're on the corner, they're making noise, people call the police come by, and they arrest them. Now, if the guy is arrested for murder, rape, robbery, theft, I don't care. Well, it's not that I don't care, but I can see that. But a lot of guys end up getting back in the criminal justice system for stupid stuff. My guess is that a lot of people who are caught up in the criminal justice system don't necessarily have to be there. They're not necessarily dangerous to society. And I'm not trying to be a left of center liberal. I'm just stating what I think is just pure fact. That if they had the guidance, if they had somebody like you to help them, if they had a parole and probation agent like LaVanya who cared about them, if they had structure in their life, parents who intervened with that individual at a young age, if you had this full court press to help the person out, I think a lot of these individuals would escape what we are currently calling a life of crime.
I agree with you somewhat, but I really think that a lot of these young guys, and I can say myself personally, had a lot of structure in life, but unfortunately, we chose to do the wrong thing. And I just feel like it's very important that you do have a probation officer that do care about their job and helping people. You know, but first of all, it must start with the person that's on parole and probation.
Sure,
you need to understand that it's your responsibility, but you got people that's helping you or trying to help you keep your life on track.
Well, what I'm trying to do, Eddie, is to put all this in perspective, because if you go on talk radio, as I've done maybe 100 times, if you talk to citizen groups, which I have done a lot of times, they're just ticked off at Bob. Mm-hmm. They're sick and tired of Bob hanging out on the corner. They're sick and tired of Bob being out there. They're sick and tired of the marijuana coming up from the corner. They're sick and tired of the police not doing anything to get Bob off the corner. They're sick and tired about reading in the newspaper, watching on television. It's daily. It's just incessant. And there are a heck of a lot of the Bobs out there who are a danger. They are. I mean, you know, they're out there thugging and mugging.
Well, you have a lot
okay,
of people.
Okay, so
I'm
trying to put this into perspective. I'm trying to say what is real, that we've got a certain amount of people out there who seem to be, for whatever reason, really involved in a criminal lifestyle. And we've got, I think, though, what I'm trying to do is break down the stereotype. I think that a lot of these individuals wouldn't be in the criminal justice system if they had a caring parole and probation agent, if they had a mentor who can guide them, if they have parents who are actively involved. That's all I'm trying to say.
I understand what you're trying to say, and I respect that. But at the same time, I think the government is at fault in a lot of ways. A lot of these faith-based organizations in fault in a lot of ways because they're not doing what they say they're not doing what they're supposed to do as far as the mentoring stuff. And I think
they're not doing enough of it.
They're not doing enough, and I don't think they have enough of the right people there to really do it.
All right, who's the right person, by the way?
You got to find them. I don't know. I know some of these faith-based organizations, some of these governments, they don't have a lot of right people there.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know what? They say the same thing.
Well, why are they not changing then?
People really do a lot of things in life in terms of volunteer. My wife is deeply involved in a lot of organizations, the PTAs, that sort of stuff. I help her out with it because I work these ridiculously long hours. And people say, I want to work with kids, or I want to work with the elderly, or I want to work with people who are out of work. When you put on that label of criminal or offender, suddenly there's a lot of people who back away.
Yeah, because I think that image, you know, once again, it's a lot of Bobs. It's also a lot of Billies, too.
Yeah.
Drink and drive and kill people in the suburb, but that stuff don't be talked about as much as it happens in the inner city. And that's the problem with me, that image. Because you can show, I done lived in the suburb.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the same thing happened when I lived in the suburbs mm-hmm. and in the city. So, but the image is different. And I think image play a big role in making people back up.
Well, so do I. And this is one of the reasons why we're going to go to Bob. It's going to be Bob's turn. Because, Bob, you're the person who's everybody is talking about, the youthful offender. I find it interesting and ironic because you're sitting here as a person being supervised by my agency, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, and I've done the same thing you've done. Only nobody prosecuted me. They dealt with it in the school. But I not only was involved in a fight, I was involved in several fights. I had my own stupid phase. And I think a lot of us have our own stupid phase. So Bob, who are you? Are you a person who went through a stupid phase, or are you a person who, what are you? Who are you?
See me, I'm a person that back then I took a lot of chances. Like I wasn't thinking for myself, but now, I can say, now I changed because I took the time out to let people help me. As far as people like my PO, her supervisor, and Mr. Ellis.
And PO being parole officer.
Parole officer.
Okay, yeah.
Like me, I grew up in not a big household, but a small household,
mm-hmm.
like a compact, and I never had that male influence.
Mm-hmm.
And it affected me as I grew up. It affected me hard.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of me talking about it, I just took my anger out on other people.
Where's your dad?
My father was locked up.
Okay. And you grew up without the influence of your dad. That is so. That's very typical in so many of the people offenders that I've talked to. Now Eddie will shake his head because he didn't, but so many of the individuals that I've talked to, and in fact the great majority, grew up without dad. So I think that's a difficult thing to overcome. So what happened? Did you start getting involved in the stupid stuff at an early age, or you didn't do it at all? Tell me about it.
It was a certain point in time where as though I looked at the streets as my second home because I felt that that male influence, that the love.
Mm-hmm.
And with the love and attention I wasn't getting at home, I was getting it from outside as
right.
far as money, clothes, girls. And I never had to work for nothing because
right.
mostly all the people where I grew up looked up to my father. So they had so much respect for my father and they couldn't give it to him, so they gave it to me.
Yep. And so what we call the lifestyle, you're part of it. It was seductive. It was easy. It got you lots of good things. And when I've been talking to individuals about crime in the criminal justice system for years, I tell them that it's not a dumb decision in the minds of many of the individuals. Violence is seen as something that's good. It keeps people away from you. It protects you. There's all sorts of benefits that people see as being involved in the criminal lifestyle. So what you're saying is that it sort of applied to you.
Yeah. Basically I'm saying I was judged and brought up off my father's image.
Right.
It was like a legacy to be continued.
Right.
So basically, now I'm just trying to change it. I don't want to be my father's man. I want to be my own man.
But you saw the benefits of your father's legacy in your mind. You saw the best benefits.
Yeah.
And a lot of people on the street see this lifestyle stuff as something that's in their best interest, correct?
Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing that kills me, because Eddie and I have had this conversation. Lots of people and I have had this conversation. The overwhelming majority of the individuals I know who've dealt drugs, who have been involved in the lifestyle, at a certain point, they ain't got nothing. They don't have a thing. They don't have a car. They don't have a house. They don't have money. It's people are so oftentimes without money, they are either dead or they are shot or they are shot at. I mean, you know, there's also that side of it that says, you know, there are extreme disadvantages, like going to prison for the rest of your life or going to prison for 5 years or going to prison for 10 years. There are extreme disadvantages in terms of being caught up in the lifestyle. So talk to me about that dichotomy. On one hand, you get involved in it because things look really good, and on the other hand, there's the possibility of all these bad things.
At the time, I didn't have to hustle, but at the time, I wanted more for myself, and just wanted to be the man of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I couldn't come home and look at another man with his foot up on my mother's table where I know my father's locked up.
Yep.
And I always told my mother, when I used to be younger, getting in trouble and all that, I used to tell my mother that I wasn't going to be like my father. But she used to always tell me, well, you acting like him. You following his footsteps. So nowadays, like, I take more stuff for granted. Like, I take my life for granted. But at the same time, I love my life. I'd do anything to be out here. Back then, I ain't care. Like, now, I used, like, what's so different from now? Back then, I used to have dreams about, like, me getting killed and stuff like that. But now, it's all positive.
Now, how many, I want to ask you two questions. The second question we'll get to in a minute. What do you think allowed you to break from that? Was it religion? Was it a girlfriend? Was it your own sense of who you wanted to be in life? But my first question is, how many of the guys who you hung out with had the same life as you did? That how many guys were involved in the lifestyle?
Mostly all of my friends was involved with the lifestyle.
Yeah, that's what I figured. What's keeping you out of it, Bob? I mean, everybody right now is riveted to their radios, to their iPod players, to their computers. Here's Bob. Bob's from the street. Bob's father went to prison. Bob's friends were involved in the lifestyle. Bob's making a conscious decision to do what's best for Bob. What happened?
When I was in the streets, I used to always get on my friends because, like, they was more talented than me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same token, I knew how to do so much things. I was real good at sports. I was real good at school, and all the people in my neighborhood used to be like, man, just stay in school, man. We don't need you out here. And the same thing they used to tell me, I never took it to consideration, but I always told my friends to go to school. And then it took me getting incarcerated and to come home to find out that all my friends either was dead or even locked up. And I just took it, I'm like, man, if you take someone, like, when I was locked up, my cellie told me, if you take a 50-year-old man who look at the world as if he was 20,
mm-hmm.
his only one thing he forgot that he missed out on 30 years of his life.
Yep.
And I told him that I wouldn't let that be me. And I promised him that.
Okay. So right now, we have, 123,000 people on a monthly basis to come in to view the radio and television programs. Most of the people are coming into the radio programs. And so you have right now tens of thousands of people who are listening to you and going, man, that is wonderful. That is just absolutely incredible. Why can't we have all of them, the people who are caught up in the lifestyle, be like Bob? what's the magic formula? What's how we can have cleaner cities? We can have more jobs. Our school systems would be 1,000% better. The life of our urban areas would be so much better if everybody caught up in the lifestyle was you.
No, I wouldn't say that, because the way I changed, like, it took time. It ain't changed overnight. I ain't happened to wake up one morning and was like, oh, nah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get my life together. Nah, it took time. Like my parole officer said, I ain't want to do this, but my best thinking got me here. So I got to let somebody else think for me until I'm able to think for myself.
But 19, you know how many people that I talk to at the microphones throughout the years who are doing really good, who are 35, 42, you know, sitting there going, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know, and I always said, why can't we do this with the 17-year-olds, the 16-year-olds, the 19-year-olds? What's the magic formula to reach the Bobs of the world? You know, there's a certain point where people just get sick and tired of all the heroin. They get sick and tired of all the crack and get sick and tired of not being employed and get sick and tired of going to jail. They're sick and tired of sick and tired. But that's like 35, 37, 42. You're 19. How did you come to this conclusion that it takes other people decades to come to?
Change. That's all I can say. If nothing changes, nothing changed. So that's the only way you can better yourself for the future is change.
And there wasn't anything that you could think of, because you said it was gradual change, and I don't want to put words in your mouth. But is there anything that you can think of that was, because different people have come to me at 37 and said it was religion. Different people have come to me at 35 and said it was my mother. Different people have come to me and said it was my wife or my girlfriend or my kids. You're 19, man. You know, what?
You gotta want to change. Can't nobody make you change.
Everybody says that. Yeah.
Can't nobody make you change. You gotta want to change it within
what
yourself.
What made you want to change it, man?
Me seeing all my friends leaving this world as a young age. Mm.
And that's so incredibly tragic.
And it been plenty of times I just without my friends, it's no me. But now, I got to think for myself. It's only me. I came in this world by myself.
I've just realized that this is going to be a every 6-month show. I want to know where Bob is. What's Bob doing? This is a show that we're going to continue to do. Lavanya, we're going to go back to you. Bob, very few times people that I interview put shivers down my spine. Bob just did it. Even Eddie, I mean, you know, Eddie and I will sit here and have our disagreements at these microphones. But Eddie is, how old are you, Eddie? 30 what? 33? Okay. Bob's 19.
Yes.
Is this inspiring or what?
It definitely is.
How did you reach Bob?
Well, you know, I'm saying, I had a case prior to Bob. And I bent over backwards. He was 17 years old, kind of similar situation. And I did everything I could possibly think of. I put him in all the programs CISOs I had.
Like what programs? Tell me about the programs.
We put him in Halfway Back. We tried to get him in the VOTE program.
Okay, well, Halfway Back is when
Halfway Back is more of a sanction-based program.
Right, it's when you're messing up. And it's like, if you don't straighten your butt out, right, we're going to put you in prison.
Right.
Okay, so it's a Halfway Back program of counseling and intervention.
Exactly, and drug treatment.
Drug treatment, that, right. And VOTE is vocational and educational opportunities.
To get you a GED, a job, different things like that. And dealing with him, he had a whole lot of he was 17, but he was on a 7th grade education level.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to get him the different services that CISOs have provided, couldn't reach him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I worked with him for almost a year and a half, and we went back and forth to court about 4 or 5 times, and the 5th time the judge was like, you've done everything you can do, there's nothing else. So they stepped him back. About a week later, I get Bob.
Yes.
And I was just like, oh, Lord. again. And so I really felt like this was my second chance to really, okay, now I know the mistakes I made with the previous one. Let me see what I can do to help Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just went full force with, you know, trying to get him back into school and talking to his parents and his counselors. You really have to get involved with everybody that's involved with the individual person.
Yep.
So everybody that Bob knew, I wanted to know. His godmother, where he was staying, the people that he was staying with. He came to the office and we met him, hooked him up with Eddie because we knew they had some similarities and we thought that Bob really needed a mentor, somebody he could look up to because his father was in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So we brought like in so many different people and we had to meet with so many different people and, you know, we tried some of the services for Bob. We did halfway back for Bob too because really it was nothing else that CSOSA provided for the youthful offenders. And right. Knowing that we can't necessarily supervise the youthful offenders like the adult offenders, the programs are geared to adults as well.
Right.
So even though he successfully completed halfway back, you know, we got him into school while he was in halfway back. They monitored that. You know, it was the best that we can do at the time. So now, seeing that we need more programs, my team has come up with a program. It's called the EYES program that specifically deals with this age group.
What is it?
It's a 5-week program. We have different sessions. We have sessions twice a week for about 1 hour, 2 hours. We talk about different things like the police. We talk about family. We talk about children. We talk about girlfriend. We talk about their goals. We talk about if they want to get their GED, the steps that they need to take,
mm-hmm.
whether job training. We hook them up at the end of the program with a program that has job training and different things. So they have the wraparound services that they have all the mm-hmm. services at the end because we know that necessarily sending them to a program or just going down the sanctions matrix with these youthful offenders is not going to work. We need something different than just the regular you test positive and verbally reprimand you.
Totally agree that the usual sanctions process is not going to work with the youthful offenders. No. I keep saying that younger folk have a way of running on you know 6 out of 8 cylinders, and people, it shows you how old I am. I'm using what do you mean 8 cylinders? Who's got 8 cylinders nowadays? Okay, 4 out of 6 cylinders. You know, they just don't run on all cylinders.
Yes.
I mean, even my own kids don't run on all cylinders. I'm amazed that there's just something about younger individuals and where my kids can screw up and they've got dad to pull them out or dad to push them back in just to prove a point. So many individuals like Bob don't have that person to rescue them.
Right.
Don't have that person to help him. So then it becomes an issue of this. If we had, and this is a question I ask Eddie all the time, and Eddie can get to it when it's his turn. If we had all the resources that were necessary, how many Bobs can we reach? Because the public is saying, you know, Leonard, you know, give me a break. We have crippled individuals and elderly people and people out of jobs and people who are hungry. You know, how many people do I have to care about and invest
all
in? And you're gonna ask me to invest time in Bob?
Yes. Every last one of them.
Okay, fine. So what do we tell the public then? What will happen if that time is invested in Bob? Do we have less crime? Do we have fewer people involved in the criminal justice system? If we have Bob with comprehensive services, will there be more Bobs in high school coming to the conclusion that Bob came to? Or is it just going to be a waste of money and time?
It may, and it may not. Bob is very intelligent. He comes up with, when he talks, we're like, wow. You know, that was good for somebody that's 19 years old. He made the decision that he wants to change. Now, you may get a 17, 16, 18-year-old that gets all these services, that has a mentor, that you have a PO that really cares, and the person has not made up their mind that they want to change. That doesn't mean that you didn't succeed, because maybe in 2 or 3 years they realize, oh, all that stuff that they were trying to do for me back then, it made a difference. I realized what they were trying to do now, and now I'm going to change, which means I'm not committing crimes for 20 years. I only committed crimes for 2 years, even though you didn't see that immediate change like we did in Bob.
Mm-hmm.
But down the line, you'll see there'll be that change. So you can't say that because I didn't see a change. Like with the guy that got stepped back that I supervised, I did a lot with him. Mm-hmm. Just because he got revoked didn't mean that I wasn't successful with trying to work with him. And maybe in 5 years when he gets out, he'll think back to everything that we did and he'll be successful and won't be in the criminal justice
system. So you're saying you're setting the table, you're sowing the seeds for an eventual change.
Exactly.
Wow, that's asking a lot from the public.
Well, that's what we have to help the people. That's why we're here, right?
Well, community. When I say that, you look away in disgust. What is the reality of what it is that I'm dealing with here? What is my reality? What is our reality in the criminal justice system?
No,
and rather than what could be or what should be, what are we dealing with that's real?
We're dealing with people who gonna make bad choices, but at the same time, you're talking with the public.
What
that's $700 billion they just cleared.
They're the ones who fund us. They're the ones who give us the money to do what we do.
But everybody ain't want them to pass that $700 billion they just passed.
Yeah, well.
And that could help elderly, cripple, and ex-offenders, if you ask me.
All I'm saying is that the public are the people who pretty much decide, in terms of through their politicians, what it is that we're going to end up with in terms of resources.
I understand.
And to convince the public that what we do is worthy enough for their consideration, we got to talk to people like you. We got to talk to the Bobs of the world. We got to talk to the Lavanyas. And we got to be able to say that your money is well invested.
I understand that. But all the public don't believe their money invested in the Iraq war. But they doing it.
Yeah, well, they got the money. We don't.
Yeah, but the public. Everybody don't agree with that. A lot of people, tax money is being put into that war that don't agree with that. But what I'm saying is this.
I'm not going to argue the war. I'm simply saying that they have the money to do what it is that they need to do. We don't.
That's what I'm saying. But if you want these people to do right, we need to have programs and people there to help these people. Other than that, I don't think you deserve, to be able to complain if you don't want these people to get any help.
Okay.
That's my opinion. I'm in the public too, so I want them to be helped.
No, I know. It's not that I disagree with you. It's just that we all got to deal with the reality of competing for dollars.
That's true.
And we all got to be able to say to the public, "You do this, you get that." And I think here's my opinion. And I've been in the system for 40 years, and you've been in the system for a long time on the opposite end of the continuum. I'm going to put here's my opinion for whatever it's worth. I think that the Bobs of the world will increase dramatically. I think crime will go down. I think our cities will improve. Our metropolitan areas will improve if we bring more programs to the table. How much will it improve? I think that if you take a look at research, it could go 20 to 30% reduction. Now, 20 to 30% reduction, considering how much they're involved in, how many crimes they're involved in, what they cost us, how much it costs to incarcerate them, how much it costs to track them down and prosecute them. We're talking about literally billions of dollars throughout this country saved by a 20 to 30% reduction.
And that'll be good. But the people in the public need to understand this. And these negative images that's being put out here about people that's coming home is not helping at all. So if we can show the Bobs of the world to the public in certain forms and fashions, it allow people to see that people are doing right. Their money not being spent on just nothing.
Right.
But when they don't know that, of course they don't think negative about people that's coming home from prison because the only thing they see is negative images from the public.
Right.
So the positive stuff is not being seen, so I see why a lot of them feel that way.
Right. That's why we're here.
Yeah, so we need to explain to them that their money being spent the right way.
And that's why we're here to have a very honest discussion. Yeah. I mean, we're not here to convince people to give money. That's not our job. In government, I mean, that may be your job, but Bob can say that. In government, I got to cut it straight down the middle. And I think I am cutting it straight down the middle. I'm taking a look at hard research. It basically says that you can reduce people being involved in the criminal justice system by 20 to 30%. That 20 to 30% may not be overwhelming to some people, but you're talking about literally hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, in savings. We're talking about tens of thousands of people not being victimized by crime, and we're talking about a much better system and more money available to do the different things we want to do with the elderly and with kids and with youthful offenders. So I think it's a payoff for everybody. And that's essentially what the research has to say. It's not so much opinion, but the research has to say that you will save money and you will lower rates of recidivism if, this is national research now, if you invest in people like Bob. I simply think that, as you said, the public needs to hear from the Bobs and the Eddie Ellis's and the LaVon Douglas's, the people who work with them, that it is possible to have change.
I agree. I totally agree. And I just hope that the image can start changing in certain ways to allow people to see that, you know, your money is being spent the right ways. But they also need to understand that the government is locking people up that have drug problems, and it costs more to incarcerate them than to put them in drug programs. Mm-hmm. So that's also another problem mm-hmm. where a lot of unnecessary money is being spent. So, you know, you're going to have to get the money to get these people some help. If you don't, you're going to continue to have a lot of the same problems.
Mm-hmm. Your relationship with Bob. So one of the things that bugged me deeply when I was involved directly with trying to help young individuals out was when they screwed up. It's when they relapsed. It's when they were on the verge of throwing their life away. If Bob reaches that point, what do you say to Bob?
I'm not looking for him to reach that point. But my thing is, he need to know that he still can stand up and move forward. It's not over. You know, and the problem is when people do make some bad choices, people come down on them so hard and make them feel like they can't recover.
Mm-hmm.
We need to let him know and whoever else that you can recover from mm-hmm. bad choices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the thing that need to be pushed. You can't overcome. But I'm not looking forward to him, to see him digress. So
No. And neither am I. And I'm not suggesting he will. But I'm simply, both of us understand that that is a possibility.
Yeah, it is a possibility.
And I'm not saying Bob's going to fail. I'm simply saying what tactics would you put in place to be sure that he doesn't fail if Bob's on the edge?
Well, we just got to just stay on top of Bob. Don't be hard on him. Just be there for him. Let him know he got people he can't talk to.
Mm-hmm.
His places he can go, you mm-hmm. know, to receive anything he needs to receive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. I don't think you need to be hard on him. Put your foot on his neck. But, you know, just be there and support him and encourage him. Let him know it's better time.
LaVonya, we've gone way beyond the 30 minutes we usually do for this program. And to the listeners, I apologize, but I think that this conversation has been so interesting that I decided not to split it into two shows and just keep it in one show. I know it's a lot longer than what you're used to, and I apologize for that, but I think you're going to agree with me that this is really interesting. LaVonya Douglas, got final comments?
Well, just for all the people out there in the world, the Bobs in the world are not bad people. They are people just like we are. Everyone in the world makes bad decisions. Like you said earlier, you got in fights, you didn't get caught, but kept.
No, Bob, I got caught. I just didn't go to.
Right, you
just wasn't prosecuted.
You just didn't get sentenced and placed on probation, but Bob did, and so he did make bad choices. And we have to wrap the services that we do have, we have to care about these people. We mm-hmm. have to care about the people on supervision,
mm-hmm.
the younger guys. That, you know, they'll come in with their macho attitudes, getting smart with you. You have to let them.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they finish, then you get into the issues that they have and start talking to them about their issues, about their parents, about school, about what they want to do. Because they want to get it out. They want, you know, to say what they want to say. But we have to, as a community, as citizens, as whoever, we have to care about these people that are on supervision.
I found, by the way, that the toughest guys on the street that I dealt with were the most insecure. The guys with the bustle shirts and the hair and the cigarette and the attitude.
Because they have to look good on
the
outside.
And that projection of violence, you know, these were the most insecure people out there.
Very true. That's very true, because they want to appear.
Right.
It's the appearance that they want to give off, right. Like, this is who I am. But on the inside,
right. On the
it's
ends?
Completely different. So let them get that off. They want it? Go ahead. You can have it. And when you finish talking the next 10 minutes, we're going to get into the issues that you
that's,
got.
That's what I always say. When you're done, man, come talk to me.
Yeah, you got to let them do it. Because if you cut them off, then they're going to feel like you cut them off.
Yeah,
let them
and then you get disrespected. And then
right,
they,
yeah, let them. The whole, go the ahead, whole, talk. Whole, do, whole, do your thing.
Well, that's what no, I should say. You know, are you done?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. You ready to talk now?
Exactly.
Okay, yeah, I'm afraid of you, man. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, can we talk now?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's what Bob did.
Is that what Bob did?
That's what Bob did. He
Bob
was hard.
Bob projected. He was hard.
He was hard.
Hard. Bob, you're the last person up with the microphone. You're going to have the final word. You know, I am now invested in you. You know, I want you back. I want all three of you back by these microphones. I want to look and check you out every 6 months or so to find out what's going on in your life. What? Do you have any final words?
Nah, not really. I just want to thank my parole officer and her supervisor and Mr. Addis for taking this time out of their busy schedule to come bring me down here.
Yeah, you know, it's just that think about it for next time, because I do want to check in on you on a regular basis. It's just that the story that you told is, I'll say it again, is inspiring to those of us who've been in the criminal justice system for a long time, who have had a career of trying to assist you guys and to try to do something else with you, and who felt, quite frankly, that it's all been a personal tragedy to see so many of you called up in the criminal justice system. So I think you give a piece of hope to an awful lot of people who are listening to this program, not just in this country, from around the world. Any other thing you want to add?
No, I just want to let the people know that's out there that's, like, got, like, criminal charges pending or awaiting. I just want, man, it's never too late to change, man. Always think about whatever you got, and it's the worst consequences, but make the best out of it, because it's there for a reason. You got to make the best.
You got the final word, Bob. And ladies and gentlemen, our guests today have been LaVonya Douglas. He was a community supervision officer with the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. Eddie Ellis, who has been to these microphones more than the Pope. We really appreciate Eddie's insights and Eddie's honesty. And we have Bob, a youthful offender, 19 years old, not his real name, who is under our supervision. And you've heard from Bob today. And hopefully you were inspired, as I was, by Bob's comments. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. Please, we need your comments. We respond individually to all of your comments. So you can reach us at media.csosa.gov. Thanks, and have yourself a great day.